Vasily Petrenko, you are in the process of recording all the Shostakovich symphonies, which is a huge project. What's been your relationship with the symphonies, and why do you think they are such an important and unique achievement for our times?
Well, I think that, first of all, they've been in my life since I remember me. They've been played in St. Petersburg and regularly, and every year. Even funny enough, they're still being appreciated, most of them, as a contemporary music in Russia. And of course, the top hits like the 5th, 7th, 8th, or 10th, they are well received and well attended. But when you put something less usual, like 12 or 11 or 4.
Really? In Russia?
Yeah, it might scare the audience a little bit.
What?
So I can remember his music since the very beginning. And to be honest, it's the spirit of Leningrad. It's true spirit of Leningrad.
But it's also a chronicle, isn't it, of Soviet life? That extraordinary...
If talking about the historical context, I'm staying actually on a position about a bit more broad picture about his symphonies. Because usually on the West is a lot of attention to the political side of it. While in Soviet Union and in Russia, it's been absolutely opposite. The most attention has been about structural side and about the musical side, neglecting the political because it's been not allowed for many, many years. I think, first of all, it's a picture of his life. The whole cycle, in my point of view, is a huge biopic about the life of an artist in the 20th century under the Soviet Union regime. And not only reflecting the political side or historical side, reflecting his own life as well. Family life, relations with other composers, relations with the music society, his relations with some great musicians like Slava Rostropovich, for instance. It's a history of the life of an artist.
See, some of us in the West wonder why he stayed in the Soviet Union when he was subjected to such humiliation on occasions.
Well, first of all, he's been very introverted human himself. He kept silence most of the time. Mm. And in fact, the silence quite often meant much more rather than he would say anything.
Yeah.
For him, what was important is to have a wife who will take care about the food and about laundry, to have a room with a table, not necessarily with a silence, but with a working table, like work desk, on which he can write the music. And the piano was not necessary. It's funny enough that the pictures, Shostakovich on the piano composing music, it's not fake picture, it's once upon a time, but he quite never composed on the piano.
Did he compose in full score straight away? Like Mahler?
Yeah. And there are very, very few drafts. And the last thing which he was needed was hot water in the bathroom.
That's amazing. You said his silence spoke volumes, but also there were lots of coded subtexts in his pieces.
The scripts are famous.
Clearly these were deliberate, these messages he was sending out. Did he really expect audiences to decipher them and understand what he was trying to say, do you think?
I think he tried to write the pieces for the broad range of the classes and all broad range of the intellectuals. Mm. The first symphony, of course, it's a conservatoire finishing work, and that's what he had been written for a year. Then second and third symphony, he felt like he failed because it's been commissioned works for industrial concerts. And then came the fourth symphony, which been kind of laboratory in many ways. Mm. And that has links to most of the pieces later on.
Absolutely.
And then he found this style from the fifth, when he'd been able to put the music into the earth of the proletariat, basically. And at the same time, he'd been able to encode some things for the very little amount of his friends. Hmm. And for the intellectuals who knows this or that. he tried to speak from his heart most of the time. But because of the restrictions in what he could say, sometimes it seems to me that he stopped himself of saying it openly, because otherwise he could have much bigger troubles. And he just encrypted them and put the things in a different way.
Better to have a voice than no voice at all. Yeah. The Sixth Symphony was another instance of Shostakovich putting out a story that he was about to compose the great Lenin symphony.
Absolutely.
So again, he was setting the world up for another of his big surprises or practical jokes or whatever you want to call it. Except with the Sixth, it begins with this wonderful protracted largo, which makes you believe that you're in for an epic. And what we get is slapstick.
I would say that this largo of the Sixth, I think the whole symphony, it's an attempt to resolve the clash of the Fifth, which has little resolution in this dark and profound adagio of the first movement, with a huge climax as well, extremely difficult piece to sustain, 22, 23 minutes.
Yes.
But then it goes to crazy second movement, when the world around really goes absolutely mad, and you can clearly see all the mad persons and personages.
Yeah.
And then it goes to this gallop of the last movement, and that's another time when the Wilhelm Tell coming there, clearly. And then it seems to me that even when the personal dissolution been resolved, you go back to the life around you, you're surrounded by this crazy world, and it leads you to self-destruction by the end, as a person. Actually, I think that's the first time in the symphonies when he really trying to show that real life, the real world, the real menace of life is something different than this creation.
He has you fooled, doesn't he? Because these two movements are kind of, they're exciting, they're exhilarating, but yet, as you say, when you reach the end of the symphony, it's kind of maniacal, isn't it? It reminds me of the kind of the end of the Witch's Sabbath from the Fantastique of Berlioz, where you've just, everything's unhinged. Mm-hmm. It all kind of goes out the window.
Well, the critics call the symphony as a horseman without head. Because they've been expecting that the first movement somehow just not appeared by some reason.
Yeah, exactly. He turns it on its head, the whole expectation is turned on its head. It's an extraordinary piece.
Once again, Sixth has written in a terrific time, I mean, when it's been a terror all around, and it's absolutely Shostakovich lost, I think, about 5 out of 8 his neighbors. Just in a block of flats, he just lost them because they've gone. And also in his private life, it's interesting because that's the time when his children appeared. That's why it's reflecting his private life as well. There are a few childish moments.
Mm-hmm.
You can see clearly the little song, this hustle of the child.
Yes, indeed.
And that's it's all very well linked all together. So it's a more complex piece rather than just...
Yes, it's not as simple as it sounds, of course. Nothing in Shostakovich is. Now, the 12th, Vasily, because it fascinates me as an outsider that the symphony celebrating the failed revolution of 1905, the 11th, is so magnificent. But the 12th, which truly celebrates, finally, Lenin in commemorating the successful revolution of 1917, is so poor. The symphony is, for all its effects, is ultimately rather unsatisfying and hollow.
In my point of view, 12th is one of the greatest.
How?
It's just, you need to know the crypts. It's the most crypted, for sure. There's so many things. I think for him, Shostakovich, because of his family, because of his respect to 1905, and
mm-hmm.
in fact, the 1905 revolution led Russia into the glory, because then, at the beginning of the 10th, up till the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, before this disastrous war with Japan and then the World War I, Russia had been the leading country of the world, simply because the laborers, it's been the labor revolution, liberals, they came to the power. They, of course, there will still be Tsar, but at least there have been the parliament, created a proper one, and there have been a lot of economic growth by that time,
mm.
first time in the centuries.
Mm.
So 1905, in a way, was a good revolution. If it wouldn't follow by 1917, then it probably would lead Russia into the glory of the 20th century. You never know. But what happens is happened.
Mm.
And Shostakovich respected 1905 a lot, because that's been a revolution initiated
mm.
by the humans.
Mm.
While 1917, it calls a Bolshevik, while the Bolshevik means, do you know what it means, the bigger mass of people who support it, while in fact there have been the smallest party who just grab the moment, grab their chance, and on the shoulders of the low class got into the power. So for Shostakovich, 1917 being much less respected revolution.
Yes, well, that's the impression I get from hearing the symphony, that his... But tell me why, because you're the first person I've ever heard that really
I never did it before recorded, and for me it's been a huge discovery. So many cryptic things. Trinody and dunody. So the three notes, which means Russia, you know, in
mm-hmm.
Russian spelling.
Okay.
Which is one thing in a different texture, but the rhythm you clearly can hear. And dunody, which means Lenin. And you can clearly see that this trinody came from the beautiful theme in the beginning, and then it created us the Russian image, the image of Russia itself, the country, the people of Russia. And the Lenin is kind of aggressor, and slowly it started to corrupt this trinity in the symphony, and in the end leading to the catastrophe. So that's one creed. Another creed that the theme of Lenin planned. So what was Lenin plot to do? What he planned to do the revolution when he's in Razliv, when he's just sitting and thinking there, and then he created a plan. It's almost exact quote from Lemminkainen, story from Sibelius.
Oh, really?
And of course Shostakovich knew that. He said, I think, a third poem just before Tuonela. And in the original poem, there's a story about Lemminkainen who'd been killed, cut into the pieces, thrown into the river. And that's what the Lenin plan to do with Russia. Then, if you go further, the theme of rebel and revolution, in a way, and the Lenin thoughts about it before, it's music which Shostakovich actually never published. And this theme is to the victims of revolution, and it gets to Aurora.
Yeah. So you interpret this slow movement, which has this throbbing pulse going underneath it all the time. How do you interpret that?
That's first of all, that's from this march. And of course, the coda, which is absolutely the same as a fifth.
Fifth, absolutely.
And that's basically the people who smashed their faces in the road surfaces all the way through. And Hugh Mace, it's extremely demanding for the orchestra, because the last, I think, 42 pages of the score is just fortissimo, triple forte.
Yes.
And it's not celebrating, it's very solemn, in a way. So if you know all the crypts in it, it's a great piece, especially how exactly it's all crypted together, and how the things linked together. You can see clearly the history, what's been done here and there, and how this rebel slowly creates. It's a great piece of music.
The transition into the finale, into the dawn of humanity, is very exciting with that solo percussion passage. No one wrote, we should say here, I don't think anybody wrote more effectively for percussion in a very primal way than Shostakovich.
Percussions, because in the early ages, while he'd been a pianist, he'd been in need of money, and by then the only two places where you can earn the money has been either in the movie,
writing movie music. There's a lot of that.
Playing in the cinema
for silent movies.
Movies. But quite soon the sound been introduced, so it's been not necessary anymore. And another part where you can, it's in the circus orchestra, the circus band. And that's what Shostakovich did for quite a couple of years. he played himself. And what is the most important in a circus band with all the tricks? Of course, it's all kind of percussions here and there.
Yes.
That's a place where he learned about them, how to use them, and what to do with them, which effect possible to create like that and like that. That's, I think, also what have a links to his many, many pieces. You know, sometimes it's a clownies, sometimes it's a sad clownies, sometimes it's acrobats, sometimes it's a trick of the acrobat who suddenly smashed himself into the ground. It's all kind of very bright and broad colors which he used in his symphonies. And in well, particularly.
It's been fascinating hearing you defend this piece, because I really believed that he hadn't written a successful piece because his heart wasn't in it.
No, he was in it. He was very much in it. It's really great piece, I think. You just need to know what's behind it. You need to know the campaign.